It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
It's time for another edition of Valley Edition, and I'm glad to say that Mark Kelsey is in the studio. Welcome, Mark. And Zaz Hollander is in the studio.
Hello. Welcome. Good morning or evening, depending on when you're listening.
Right. And I am calling in from Anchorage, and I just want to nod in the direction of Carrie Bowling, who is operating the board. Thank you, Carrie.
Hey, you're welcome.
So we've had a range of interesting, in fact, we have ongoing interesting topics. But I'd like to start with Zaz. It's been covering some of the activity that has occurred at the Borough Assembly. It's been a heated discussion. What happened there?
A lot happened. A couple things of note happened. But at the Borough Assembly meeting, there were two things that basically didn't happen. There was a plastic bag tax conversation on the agenda, and really there was almost no discussion because of something that happened at the city of Wasilla. In early January, the city of Wasilla banned plastic bags as of July 1. And so the borough, given that action, it complicated things for a bag tax. And so they have indefinitely tabled that ordinance, which means it's basically gone. And so the next step in all this is statewide. There's legislation proposed on a different bag tax. I think it's 20 cents a bag. But the city of Palmer is also discussing what to do with plastic bags next month. And it sounds like a tax would probably not emerge from those conversations. The city manager has been pretty clear that he opposes that action.
And I know that the mayor of Wasilla, Bert Cottle, has pointed out that they're the powerhouse when it comes to numbers of big box stores, probably numbers of plastic bags that are distributed. And once they take that action, that leaves places like Palmer, which has some stores, and also some of the other areas of the borough, pretty much looking to perhaps go along in some fashion. The complication is that while the city of Palmer could do a similar piece of legislation and ban plastic bags, the borough has a more complicated road to go, as I understand, because they really don't have the authority to do a ban.
Right. So, and I haven't done any reporting on the number of large retailers that meet the ordinance, $1 million in revenue outside the cities. In Houston also, we haven't discussed Houston. They've got a few in there. They've got Three Bears in there. I don't know if they're a million yet, but anyway, it's a big box-ish. There are a number of Three Bears stores around the borough. I haven't done a count on the number of big box retailers, so-called big boxes around the borough outside the cities.
And what we do know is that there is time for both actually the borough and the city to take some action. The action in Wasilla takes effect on the 1st of July. Mark, did you have any comment about any of this?
I'm curious if anybody is saying, you know, let's sort of take a wait-and-see approach, given that there's a bill pending in Juneau. Is there any move toward holding off to see what's done at the state level?
I think the answer to that comes from the borough having its plate full with other things, particularly the budget in general. The city of Palmer has always been cautious about any actions of this sort. So I think that they're going to have the discussion, maybe some preliminary ideas, and then we'll see whether that pre-file legislation actually makes it anywhere in Juneau. But Zaz, while you're here, I'm particularly interested also in the second topic that the borough discussed, and that had to do with smoke and an MOA and maybe give a little bit of the detail for listeners.
Sure. So, yes, this was the air quality issue that sort of centers on Butte, because one of only two borough-operated air quality measuring stations are in Butte. And Butte, when the weather gets cold, people burn wood, open burning, and an inversion all kind of combine to occasionally put that station out of federal air quality compliance, and that's happened just a few times, almost happened in 2017, but for a warm December. And so since 2006, the borough has operated under an agreement with the Department of Environmental Conservation that allows the borough to do public education and some other stuff. And so what the borough was, the assembly considered on Tuesday, was an ordinance that would have increased some of the borough's abilities to work with residents. And it's more complicated than this, but the borough would say to put off regulations, to put off EPA coming in to regulate and to force expensive changes to residents here and potentially around the borough instead of around the current two stations, one here in Palmer that's never been out of compliance and the other one in Butte. And so what complicated this whole conversation, because it's science, is a flyer that went out, I think, within a few weeks of the meeting. I know Brian Endel posted it on Facebook. Brian has run against Jim Sykes for the assembly district that includes Butte as a fairly conservative politician. And the it was a flyer that was headlined something like "Borough taking wood stoves," and so there were a number of people who came to the assembly meeting under the impression that part of this ordinance involved this kind of strong arm technique. There were some fears voiced that the borough would be coming into homes. Those fears were kind of quickly shot down by the mayor, Bernhalter, and a few assembly members. But there were other assembly members, including Ted Leonard and George McKee, who echoed concerns about the science. And George McKee said, "You know, I don't have a staff report from our planners, a detailed staff report. There's a lot of science on PM 2.5, which is the particulate matter involved here. It's not the same as the grit that flies around when the wind is blowing off the Kinnickinnic rivers, which is another inaccurate description of the issue. You know, a lot of people at the meeting and on social media, where it really went nuts, were talking about how, well, the government doesn't even know the difference. And the government does. I think it's a PM 10 particle for gravel and grit. And 2.5 is the smaller wood particles, wood smoke particles. But anyway, the upshot was, it sounds like the outcry maybe may have changed a few votes on the assembly. And again, it was the decision was not to update that agreement with DEC, that the existing one stands, so public education and whatnot. But there will be no new action the borough can take. I've heard from people involved in this issue that doesn't mean it goes away, that there will be more consideration, that there was a lot of good information put out during this debate. But at least for now, that agreement has not been updated.
So what was your sense about the instruction to the borough manager? This was defeated as a proposal for an MOA extension, but was he going to do anything as far as the assembly was concerned?
McKee, I believe, instructed, I had to peel off to take care of young people at some point that night, but I think McKee asked for a more detailed planning report, and the manager, Moosey, was going to work on that.
So it's sort of a light touch of, yes, we need more information, but nothing directed to a specific time reconsideration of this. Okay. Well, the other topic of great interest, and when we refer to Facebook sphere or blogosphere, obviously has to do with political jockeying. We have three people who have been selected by the GOP to replace resigning Senator Mike Dunleavy. And we also have the statement by Charlie Huggins that he would not continue his work toward becoming the next governor. Mark, comments?
Lots and lots of stuff happening there for sure. And a jockeying for position is definitely a good way to describe it. Charlie Huggins seems to be leaning on a financial argument, you know, with his claim that the governor race is shaping up to be one of the most expensive in state history. That may be a bit of an overstatement, but it certainly seems to be his, cause for stepping down. I have heard that that Dunleavy has attracted a huge amount of money. So, you know, that kind of comparative disadvantage is not good for any candidate. there is a question about the money. I think there's talk of a lot of it being from out of state. I tried to find his APOC reports, did not have a lot of luck. That system seems to have gotten way more convoluted than it used to be. But at some point, it should be clear to everyone who gave what to whom, and that will say a lot. It leaves, I'm not sure how much it clears the field, though, with three or four others on the Republican side still involved. There's also a question about Dunleavy's statewide appeal, but
right. We
will certainly find out more as time goes by.
Right, and coming back to the other point of who will replace Dunleavy, the three people include a sitting representative, George Rauscher, and two other GOP politicians. The governor gets to choose, and my understanding, this is going to happen fairly soon, unless there is a request for additional names or something of that sort. I know there in the past have been less than smooth sailings for the replacement of people who have been resigning. So this is still then going to cause a domino effect, because if, for example, Mr. Rauscher were chosen, then he would leave his seat and someone would have to be appointed to his seat, and on and on. So curious questions, and we'll be dealing with them a bit later.
I have a hard time imagining, given Rauscher's current allegiances and, you know, how he voted in the last session, I have a hard time imagining that the governor would choose him. It's also interesting to note Suzanne Downing in her must-read Alaska blog noted that Jim Culver had applied for the position as well. He was not taken seriously by the party, but she noted in her piece that the governor could still pick Culver because he's an official applicant. So it will be interesting to see what goes on here. If he did that, well, and whomever he picks is subject to a majority confirmation vote of Senate Republicans only. So,
right.
You know, Culver would probably have a tough row to hoe there, but it does make for some interesting politics.
Is Zana still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
So I noted in the ADN a report about the Grunewalds suing some of the people involved with the death of their son. Did you have any update on any of that?
Well, I mean, the article itself is sort of what it is. And this was, to be clear, and I think it probably does matter to Edie Grunewald, Ben Grunewald, David Grunewald's father, who is the manager of his estate, is the only name on the lawsuit. It's a civil wrongful death suit. And it's filed against a number of people, including two teenagers at the time who allegedly supplied the gun used in the murder because they traded it for drugs with the four teens who were accused of murdering David Grunewald. But the suit also, as defendants, lists the parents of those kids. And the guy who's the boyfriend of one mother of one, who had an unsecured weapon in his house, and that was the pistol that was traded for drugs that was allegedly used for the murder. The troopers haven't confirmed any of this. We didn't name any of the people involved, even though you can find them, because a civil lawsuit, it has a different burden than a criminal case does. Nobody's been charged,
right.
And we just couldn't get confirmation. And there have been no hearings set in that one yet. Ben Grunewald is seeking over $1 million in damages, and these cases can, and I'm assuming in this case, does target homeowners insurance, which covers negligence in your home. And this is a negligence case that the parents failed to supervise their kids, failed to know that their past bad behaviors, which were not described in any detail in this lawsuit, in the complaint, that they should have known because these kids were kind of not listening and were doing bad stuff. But we don't know what any of that stuff was. And so the other thing that's happening today, and the reason I'm going to need to leave, is one of the five defendants in the Grunewald murder criminal case, Devin Peterson, is making a change of plea at 10:30 this morning, which is in about 15 minutes. And he's expected to make the change of plea on evidence tampering charges. And so that will, you know, that's one out of five defendants will have some resolution in court. He hasn't been sentenced yet, but the other four are still on track for trials later on this year. And Devin Peterson was not charged with murder. He was charged with just evidence, only evidence tampering.
So is he changing the plea to
guilty
and taking a deal of some sort?
Right. That's what a plea deal would involve, is pleading guilty and getting concessions on sentencing, usually, or getting other charges dismissed.
Okay. Well, there's one other topic that I also noted in two locations. One, the official one, coming out of the Attorney General's office. The Attorney General of the state of Alaska has encouraged banks to play well with business people involved in the marijuana industry. Did you notice anything about that, Mark?
Well, I saw the story, and it's definitely been a topic of conversation since the vote to legalize, because that's been a sticking point in other states. It's interesting, I think, especially because it runs counter to what's going on at the federal level and the insistence from the from Attorney General Sessions and the Trump administration that they are not going to look the other way at relaxed pot laws in states. So it seems to be that we might be heading for some kind of showdown there. And it's inevitable, I think, too, given the vast amount of cash coming in states that have already done the legalization thing.
Well, I'll point to one other, in this case, publication, and that is Elise Petkutak, in her opinion piece this week, did talk about marijuana, the Attorney General of the United States, and in her opinion, what looked like a clear difficulty for Attorney General Sessions to interfere. And her point made was that a couple of steps here. One, that there were too many dollars involved, too much business involved, and too much support from the general public. And I thought she phrased it very well, saying going into a very strong headwind, but the money piece was the thing that was going to make a difference. And I thought it was very interesting that we had in that almost the same publication, same day, a formal step taken by the Attorney General to assist in this process of legalizing the money part of marijuana. Any further comments?
I think that's a very sound observation on her part. It does seem that there is a huge, a groundswell in favor of this. There's more and more states that have approved it, more on the ballots upcoming. The tide is definitely against Jeff Sessions.
So that leaves us with a minor thing happening in Washington, D.C., which is, of course, a question of whether the government will shut down, whether Congress will be able to agree on a CR or continuing resolution that will fund things for a little while. Meanwhile, in the background, there's discussion about DACA and CHIP and whether the Democrats can support some efforts for health insurance and immigration, or whether the Republicans will be able to force what has passed the House through. Question mark, what's your guess? I think as we are doing this show right now, the discussion continues in the Senate, and it's pretty much around whether there will be an ending to debate resulting at a stoppage of some parts of the government, U.S. federal government's activities tonight, or whether they will come up with something that will allow further discussion. What's your thoughts on that matter?
I think it will be fixed. I think there's been a lot of, it's high drama. Let's face it, more than a little bit of theater here. And sort of the ringleader of it all is, not surprisingly, a guy who spent a decade hosting a reality TV show. So there's certainly that element to it. I think in the end, a fix will happen. and the president will take full credit for it.
A little bit of history here. I wanted to review before I got a sense of what we were really looking at when we say stop the government. Three times recently, continuing resolutions failed, and essentially the government stopped for a period of time. Two of those were when Bill Clinton was president, and the third was, interestingly enough, when Barack Obama was president. And the issue then was around the Affordable Care Act legislation, which was ultimately approved. But Republicans at that time were able to delay continuing resolution, and that's what happened. So this has come up before. We tend to forget about those things. There have been a variety of discussion about what does this cost in terms of individuals concerned not being able to actually go to a federal office, et cetera, and what are the dollar costs to the economy in general. And people have varying opinions about it. But this is the first time, I am told, that there's been this kind of concern when the presidency and both houses of Congress.
Yes, I was going to point that out.
Yeah, by the same party. So we'll see what happens. We'll see where it goes. Well, I want to thank Mark Kelsey for coming into the studio today. Thank you, Mark.
Very welcome. Always my pleasure.
And I want to thank Zaz Hollander for being there as she could. She fit that into her very busy schedule. I also want to thank Terry Bulling for running the board today. And we'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.